Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today I have the pleasure of having Dr. Carl Swan, who's the author of Be the People, A Call to Reclaim America's Faith and Promise. She's the professor of political science at Vanderbilt University. If you have a question for her, you can call at 347-324-3460. Again, it's 347-324-3460. Dr. Swan, thank you for joining the program.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. I guess to talk about your book itself, to begin with, if you can talk about yourself, how did you come about writing this book?
I started the book during the summer of 2009, and at that point I was very frustrated at some of the changes taking place in the country. I felt that there was a lot of deception taking place, and that many Americans had been deceived into supporting programs and policies that were against their best interests. And those Americans who could see through the smoke and mirrors, who were not deceived, weren't sure what to do about the conditions that they found troubling. And so Be the People was my effort to help educate the public about some of the conditions that are taking place, as well as offer strategies for how we can regain what I see as lost power.
Anything that really stands out that just really, really got to you, any particular incidents that you can share with us that spark you to make you move forward with this book?
Well, some of the things that have troubled me deeply has been the erosion of our civil rights and civil liberties. And I realized that the Patriot Act was put in place during the George Bush administration right after 9/11, but the expansion of it in a way that further reduces our privacy concerns me quite a bit. So that was one of the issues. I was not on board with granting our government the power to assassinate foreign citizens suspected of terrorism, if they're U.S. citizens suspected of terrorism, because at the heart of our rule of law and system of justice is that a person is innocent until proven guilty. They have a right to a trial, and what we have done is grant the government the ability to assassinate people who are suspected of a crime as opposed to bringing them to justice. That bothered me. And just the whole trend that I see taking place where there's just, at the highest levels, there seems to be no respect for the rule of law. Laws are not being enforced against the illegal immigration and about some other crimes that take place in the country. I find that very troubling, because if it's not enforced and if we don't get the tone from the top that these forms of behavior are inappropriate, you cannot expect the people to rise above their leaders.
You think because of 9/11 has played such a part of that, that now the nation itself and the world is just in a panic mode, they're just reacting mode and versus being real proactive. We're just going to go ahead and react regardless.
I just think most Americans are not paying attention, and while they are not paying attention, they're trying to make a living and worried about how they're going to put gas in their tanks. The government is usurping more and more powers, and that we're becoming a country that doesn't resemble the United States of America as I have always understood our country. And that was part of why I decided to write Be the People. In Be the People, I start my first chapter just to, you know, sort of decrying the state of the nation, but also pointing out that in many ways we've become very, very Orwellian in how we, the government treats people. And by Orwellian, I'm referring to the novel that George Orwell published in 1949 about a totalitarian society. And I also talked about just the connections between some of the people that are in government and this radical guy named Saul Alinsky that published a book called Rules for Radicals, and it encouraged radicals or would-be radicals to infiltrate organizations, keep their heads down low until they got a critical mass, and then to take over those organizations and institutions. And I believe that's what's happened in America, is that there are people in power in our state, local governments, as well as institutions like our colleges and universities who have used that strategy to get a critical mass, and now they're shifting the society in a direction that's totally contrary to the traditional ways that we've been as far as our values and our principles.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's by party, or you just think it's just the increase in power of the government just want to control our lives as citizens?
I think both parties are guilty, but that under President Obama, it seems to have risen to new levels. But Bush cracked the door. President Obama drove a tractor trailer through it.
Wow. What do you think of this particular environment? I don't recall within many decades that we have in this crossroads as a nation faced with all type of issues. I mean, Congress can't agree on anything. You know, this dissension between both parties, even with the executive office, and then you have, it seemed like in the far distance, you have the judicial system who, oh my gosh, I mean, we don't know what they all about. Do you see down the road with this year, this election, that anything really will change, or is there any light in the tunnel?
I don't see light. I mean, I don't want to be a person that's not optimistic, but I think it's going to take a lot to move the country in a different direction, and it looks certainly like Mitt Romney will be the Republican nominee. It looks increasingly like that every day. I don't have a huge sense that if he were somehow to defeat President Obama, that the country would radically change. My fear would be that he would end up continuing some of the policies that are not in our best interest. And the problems that I believe that affect America are problems that the American people have to be vigilant. Whether it's a Republican or a Democrat in office, they need to keep their eyes focused on that person and the policies that are coming from the administration. And unfortunately, we can't trust the press to report the information that people need to make good decisions for themselves and their families.
Why do you believe we don't? People can't trust the press? You think they're just biased? Only whatever it bleeds, the old saying, it leads? Are they chasing that?
Well, we know there are studies to suggest that a large percentage of the people that are in journalism are liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they have a dog in the race. They're not, you know, like we all have our opinions and our biases, but there's some people that have an agenda to advance, and they use their job to do that. And so in the public, we don't have time to go out and investigate everything. We have to trust the media. We have to trust them, you know, to provide information. And the only protection we have is to get our media from several different sources. And so if a person has enough time to get media from more than one source, it's possible that they'll get a better idea of what's taking place in reality. But, you know, it's just almost impossible to get good information these days.
you think you have a sense of, like, who to really trust, because now you have the four major news organizations, the news media, television networks, have only going to give you a sliver of the information.
They have a tank for someone, and they have corporate headquarters. They have leaders, and those leaders, I believe, tell them which stories to push and how they're going to frame it. And it's really hard for the truth to break through in an environment like that.
Do you think there are any newspapers like the old days, like the old New York Times and Washington Post, who would just give us the facts of the story? Are there any news organizations like that anymore? Or
they're fewer and far between. I think that there's some stories always leak out on the internet, but you can't trust everything you read on the internet, because sometimes people will fake Associated Press articles, and so. But sometimes there are documents that are posted on the internet that provide us with information that the government was concealing, and there are people that are very skilled at capturing those posts, so that if they disappear later, that someone has a record.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the bloggers are reliable. I think there are some newspapers online that are not. Right now, I like The Blaze. It's Glenn Beck's newspaper, but it covers stories that the mainstream media often overlook. And so, you read the stuff, and it sometimes leaves you dismayed because conditions are so much, much worse than maybe even you knew. But the person that wants to know what's taking place in the country, they have to do a lot of reading. They can't just go to Drudge or the Washington Post or New York Times and L.A. Times and feel like that they have an accurate sense of what's taking place in the country. It's a lot of browsing, a lot of skimming, and some reading between the lines to come up with what's really happening. And you can really see that with the case with Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, how that was portrayed for at least 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden we found out that things weren't what we thought. The 911 tape had been edited, and just CNN had guessed about some things and accused him of hurling some racial epithets that he didn't. And all of that came from the media, and we have the country at each other's throats. And we at each other's throats racially, all because the media, as well as certain leaders, just hyped everything up. And some of what was hyped up was false.
Wow. And they just going with the wind. It was whatever leads a story, that's the direction they have. There's nothing.
Everyone's competing for ratings, so whatever they can do that's more sensational, that's where they go.
Even give them a temporary hit, they're just going to go there and forget about what the true sense of the story.
And then, how important, there's so many important issues that every time you go to a show and they're focused on Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, there's so many other things happening in the world that you're not getting.
Mm-hmm.
That has more far-reaching consequences. And one of the things, too, there's a newspaper article today about Chicago. It's had 120 murders in the first quarter of the year.
Wow.
That's a huge number of murders. Some people ask the question of where's the outrage? Because that's a lot of deaths, and many of them probably are young black men.
Mm-hmm.
That, should be the topic of some discussion, certainly in the black community, and it should be something that you'd hope the black leaders would be out there decrying.
Especially in Chicago.
I know, and, you'd go to some parts of Philadelphia and different other cities, they have a similar problem, but that's not the news, because people expect, gang violence in the inner cities, and that's not news, but with the Trayvon Martin incident, they spent so much time on it, and a lot of what they were giving us was false. They're still spending a lot of time on it. I take you back to, what are they not covering? There's so many things happening in the world that are life-changing, that affect all of us, that's not getting coverage. And so for people to really be to gather the information they need to hold government accountable, they have to have the information first, and it's going to take some work.
Do you think, in your opinion, as a nation, I mean, we were the dominant leaders for this past 100 years or even a little bit more.
Right.
Or you think we're losing our edge?
Think we've already lost it, and I think it's a self-inflicted wound, injury, and part of it is that we stopped having any kind of standards about admission into the country. When we don't enforce our own immigration laws and we don't have standards for people, then you can expect chaos. And we don't have standards for our own people. We excuse behavior that's inexcusable. Then you should expect the country to be in decline.
Taking back to this current administration with President Obama, I know that you mentioned at top of the hour regarding the President Bush opened the door and Obama ran a train through it. Do you think it, you know, being a president of the United States, you have this large entity that's just massive. It's just, for any CEO, it's just thing. But taking an account of that, do you think it's just really his advisors saying, this is what you need to do, and pushing these things through, and he just pick his battles because he can't?
I mean, the president is only as good as the people he appoint to office.
Mm-hmm.
And so not only does he have the cabinet officials, he has, I lost track of how many czars that he now has. I think I lost track at 34. And these are unelected, these are appointed positions that are not approved by the Senate, so there are no investigations of the background of the people who are placed in those offices. And I think that in a situation like that, people are probably running around doing all sorts of things without any accountability. These are people, you know, that I don't know how much experience they have. I don't know how committed they are to the country. We know very little about many of them, and this Obama administration, there is a sense of people advancing their own personal agendas, advancing their own personal causes, I would say to the detriment of the country. That's how it feels to me. I don't get the sense of people that, you know, respect and love the nation and are really pushing for programs and policies that bring us together rather than divide.
And
no matter what the president says, and, you know, and how many times Michelle, you know, gets dressed up and goes to a school and reads to the children, there are reports now that his campaign, reelection campaign, is almost all white, and also that women are paid way less in his administration than men. I mean, I thought they were all for pay equality.
Mm-hmm.
And that there's not diversity in his campaign, not diversity in his highest levels of associates. And so, I mean, you don't even get the window dressing. You get the rhetoric, but nothing else behind it.
So, in your opinion, this is going to be a really close election.
I probably think that Obama will be reelected because I think that they either win it on the merits or in those places where they don't check the ID of people who are voting, that there will be undocumented people voting at the polls. And that is why we need identification. Every time someone that's undocumented is able to slip through and cast a vote, or people cheat and cast more than one vote, or they vote the dead, then it dilutes your influence and my influence. We should all care about it. And I don't buy for a second that poor people don't have IDs. You need IDs to get social services. You need IDs to drive. You need IDs to buy alcohol, to buy cigarettes. I mean, a whole bunch of things. You can't function in this society without a government-issued ID. I don't buy that poor people don't have IDs.
I agree with you with that. I mean, it's... you even have a school ID, which and you still from a university, they at least you have some type of ID, then versus coming in with no ID
and
at all.
If you don't have an ID, then the Democrats and the people, you know, who say that poor people don't have IDs, they should be putting hundreds of thousands of dollars in into taking people, walking them through the steps and helping them get the information they need to get birth certificates, to get Social Security numbers, to prove they are who they say they are. I think that that should be a priority for our government. We need to know who's in the country, and people that want IDs need to have IDs. And if they don't have IDs, then someone should come along with them, stand with them, walk them through the process, because sometimes it can be very bureaucratic.
Absolutely. Some of the churches should be jumping on board to try to help with that.
No, but they no that would be too much common sense. That would be they would just rather argue and complain and call it racism and than to just say, okay, if there is a problem, in fact, and these people don't have IDs, what can we do to help them get the identification they need to function fully in our society so that they can fly, catch a plane if they need to catch a plane, if they need to sign up for food stamps, up for housing assistance, if they need anything from a government to agency, they have to have a government-issued ID. If they want to, they need a government-issued ID. And so it's a no-brainer.
Well, before we go back into your book for a second regarding the Romney campaign, do you think society is having the biggest issue because he's a Mormon? And that's
no,
going to play
a... No, I think his record is the problem.
Okay. Okay. So it's not really his faith that's going to be a problem. It's going to be his record.
There's about 22% of Americans who say they would not vote for a Mormon. We know from research that most people would give a pollster the socially desirable answer. They're not going to tell you that they're not going to vote for a Mormon or they're not going to vote for a black or a woman. They will either lie or they'll say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so if 22% were willing to say to a pollster, to a stranger, that they're not going to vote for a Mormon, the number is much higher. And an election can easily be won or lost by percentages that large.
Wow. In this past decade, well, beyond this past, since 2000, since the Bush was first elected, this country politically has some real close calls. Do you think a lot of that began in with the 2000 election, 1999?
What kind of close calls?
Well, for example, with Bush and Gore, and you know.
Oh, you mean close elections?
The close elections, and that. Do you think that started the trend, and then you had 9/11 now started because people were upset. Really then felt that people were being truthful with them and giving the whole facts and, you know, over the dimple chat and so forth, all these technicalities here. And then you deal with 9/11 added to that, and then we're up to today. Now nobody can get along. Do you think it started back with that first election in 1999?
No, I think it's been, you know, these things have been brewing for a long time.
And it's just now exploding.
In a way, yes. And I find it very disturbing that a lot of people really don't care for Mitt Romney for a variety of reasons, but they
mm-hmm.
hate President Obama, so they will vote for Mitt Romney, but it will not be with any enthusiasm. So they don't. There's no candidate running, I believe, that has enthusiasm. Maybe the hardcore Obama supporters that really do want a different kind of America. They want America to look like Europe. They may be enthusiastic and excited, but most of us, I don't believe we're enthusiastic or excited about either candidate.
I agree with you. I don't think any accolades to people in general, they're not really excited about either one of them. So it's going to be really interesting to see with this particular election what's going to end up happening.
And it's so interesting to me to watch Republicans talk and they feel like it has to be a minority on the ticket. They just believe that there's some kind of magical formula that the American people are so stupid that all you have to do is stick a minority on the team and somehow that's going to save the Republican ticket.
Well,
I think if they want two white men, they should just have two white men. Just make sure
absolutely.
That they're two very qualified white men. Because I don't think that it should be about that. I think they should be looking for the best candidate they can find as opposed to feeling like they got to put a woman on the ticket or they have to put a black on their ticket. They have to put a Hispanic on the ticket. They need to find the best one. And then some of them say, I like Alan West because he's just interesting. He has a very interesting background. He doesn't seem to have a ton of baggage, and he's smart.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he would handle himself well. But I have some people say, well, they like J.C. Watts. And, like, you know, J.C. Watts is fine, but I just think, you know, like, and then people want Rubio thinking if they put him on the ticket that all the Hispanics are going to forget what they don't like about the Republican Party. I don't think it works that way.
Well, and also the baggage of having someone who's not going to be truthful to them either until they have to start digging.
Yeah, and I just feel strongly that for the Republican side, they need a candidate that's going to be a contrast to President Obama, not someone that's close to him in viewpoint. Instead of going for a moderate to someone to the left, they need to be going for someone to the right. And so the whole strategy that they have in mind is, okay, Mitt Romney has been presenting himself as a real conservative, and then once he gets the nomination, he'll move, you know, towards the middle and present himself as more to the left. I just don't think that that's going to energize the conservative base because they don't trust him anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. As being a professor, how do you advise a student today in this political environment of finding the right resources that they need to get a good paper to you, that they can trust the resource? I can imagine as being a student and looking, you're only getting half the stories here. You had to dig so hard. What type of resources do you send them? Say, hey, look for this, look for that.
I mean, best I can tell my students is to read more than one newspaper and realize that each of them have their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I tell them to get that source from more than one get that information from more than one source.
Okay.
And then, you know, it's pretty easy to know what CNN is about, what Fox is about, the Washington Post, Washington Times, all of those places have, you know, different perspectives. I read the Washington Times because that's purely conservative, but I know what I'm reading when I read it, and I'm likely to get some stories that I'm not going to find anyplace else.
Okay.
But I still, you know, I either read or skim the New York Times, CNN stories, the Fox News, as well as you know, some of the others. And then I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm reading what people post. And it takes a degree of engagement. And I tell you, if something's going on in my life and I miss the news for a day or two, it's almost like a ton of things happen. I can't imagine what it would be like for people who are busy and they're not following the news.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even know what kind of country they're living in. They may not even be aware that we've had a revolution.
No, and some of them, it just scares them to try to comprehend what's going on. This is where I stay in, you know, stay in the dark and stay in your little piece of land that you have of America than versus facing the truth.
Well, what I feel is that what you don't know can hurt you, and it can hurt you seriously. And so ignorance is not bliss when it comes to the changes that are taking place in our society.
Mm-hmm. In the scope of your book, kind of tell us about the book and in it a summary of what you want to leave readers with.
Well, even though I may have sounded today like it was hopeless, I don't believe it is.
No, it's not.
And there's a chapter about America's religious roots in case people have forgotten or have heard from others that America was founded as a secular nation, that's not really true, that America has strong Judeo-Christian roots.
Mm-hmm.
What is true is that the Constitution doesn't mention God or the Bible, but there was a reason for that. You know, they did want the Constitution to be a document that pretty much focused on the rule of law. They were trying to avoid a national church and some of the bloody wars that had terrorized Europe. And so there was a reason why they didn't want the American government, you know, like torn apart by religion. Chapters in the book look at the family, immigration and the rule of law, race relations, and abortion. I spend quite a bit of time on abortion and Planned Parenthood because I think that's a huge issue, especially for minority communities, where in some cases there are more black babies being aborted than are being born. And if you look at the black-on-black, you know, violent murder rate and the abortions, there's something really disjointed about the value of how black people value human life. And
mm-hmm.
it's like we see all the outrage about the death of Trayvon Martin, which was very tragic, but where's the outrage for all the unborn black children or babies that are being aborted and for the young people that are being slaughtered by each other and the old people that are being terrorized in their neighborhoods? Where's the outrage for those people?
Yeah, it's really, really sad.
And then I'm a firm believer that our Judeo-Christian way of life and that there are values and principles, and some of them are sort of enshrined in the Ten Commandments, but there is a behavior code that is life-giving and can turn one's life around, and we've lost connection with that. There's so much focus on what I can get from the government or what I can get from someone else and less about, you know, what we can do for each other.
Wow, that is really amazing. I mean, it's just, I guess, it'd be interesting to see a year from now what has happened with the elections and with our government, with the society, how people's minds will be a year from now.
Well, I mean, nothing's going to happen until we change the culture by making people aware of what's happening and then sort of encouraging them. If they care about this country, they care about the future of their children and their grandchildren, they have to get involved. The time for sitting around on the sidelines, that's over. And so the Be the People book is a call for the we the people of the Constitution to stand up and be the people who take responsibility for the kind of nation we have and the kind of government we have. There's a reason why we have the politicians we do in Washington. We put them there.
Do you think there is any leadership within the church to kind of bring us back to where we were in that civil rights movement?
Very limited.
Or very limited.
Very limited. For every black pastor that gets it and is willing to speak out boldly, there's probably 10 others that's going to criticize that person for really for calling it the problem out for what it is. And the black pastors that really know that there's a crime problem in the black community, that the hoodies, you know, it makes great gym wear, and there are places it might be appropriate, but that it is associated with gangs, and it might not be a good idea to be, you know, to spend your money on hoodies and walk with your pants sagging around your butt below your waistline, that maybe that's not a good idea. Those pastors are often castigated, and they're seen as blaming the victim when they really are trying to encourage people, you know, to pull themselves up and behave in a responsible manner, to look respectable, to carry themselves in a particular manner.
Do you think it's the environment? There's an old adage that says we are products of our environment. Some people can pull themselves out of from the bootstraps.
It is the environment. We have to change.
Okay.
I think we all have a responsibility especially those of us that know better and have been successful, instead of apologizing for bad behavior, we need to be speaking out and encouraging people and pushing them in a direction that's going to transform their lives. They may be in a bad environment. They may have started off in a bad environment, but they don't have to stay there.
Absolutely. Okay. I guess to end with the episode, with what advice do you have that you want to share about your book and what you think we should be looking towards towards this year in politics?
Well, I mean, I think that President Obama is going to be reelected. I don't think that that's the best thing for the nation, but it is what it is. I think for the black community that we are in a crisis situation. In some cases, we're worse off today than we were, you know, 20, 30 years ago when it comes to the unemployment situation. And we have to realize that government is not the solution, that we don't need more food stamps. We don't need more welfare. We do need jobs. We need a government that's going to enforce the laws of our land. We need reform of immigration. And by reform, I don't necessarily believe that we need to take and legalize 12 to 15 million people or maybe more who are in the country illegally that are holding jobs that could go to American workers. We need to hold our governmental officials accountable, and we need to support our police, our law enforcement, because we have a situation now where some of them are getting gangs who fire upon their cars, shoot at them, and they're not allowed to shoot back. I always hear when, you know, someone gets shot, and especially if they're unarmed, but there are some cases out there where there are gangs, people that are firing on police cars, and they're engaging in behavior that really does need to be stopped. They need to be afraid to shoot at a police car.
No, they really don't, which is really sad, but I guess it's that the way we are in society today. Hopefully things will change in the future.
There's no value for human life, and you know, there's something broken in society, and there's something broken in a lot of black communities, and I think that for black people, if you really care about the country, if you really care about your family, if you really care about yourself, then we really do need to take responsibility for the things that are wrong in our communities. And if enough of us were to do so, if enough of us were to get on the same page, we could turn things around. And my Be the People book is not written, you know, for one particular community. It's written for all Americans. There's one chapter on race. I believe that we either stand or fall together as a nation, that it can't be all the identity politics. We have to seek solutions that will benefit people of a particular social class and situation.
Wow. Well, we're going to leave it at that. I really appreciate you coming to the program, talking about your book. And where can we get your book?
It can be ordered from Amazon or at any major bookstore. And I am on Facebook and Twitter. On Facebook, my main page is the Professor Carol M. Swain page. And I'm also on Twitter. But there are links on my website. And for anyone that wants to know a little bit more about where I come from, there's a short documentary on my life. It's about 6 minutes long that
mm-hmm.
will show the listener, you know, a little bit about my story.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what's the website address again?
CarolMSwain.net. CarolMSwain.net.
Okay. Well, again, I really appreciate you coming into the program. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, take care. This is another episode of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. If you want to download this episode, you can go to iTunes, or you can get it from Blog Talk Radio. Thank you, take care, and have a great day.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, Visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.